the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. All right, well, let's get into the week of baseball. I had a few things of interest go on during this week, starting with on Monday. New York Mets pitcher Chris Bassitt had one of his best outings in many years, where he threw 114 pitches and went 8 solid innings and just had a great start for the New York Mets. And so it's looking like the New York Mets are starting to get really strong at the right point in time of the season. You know, like I said, they got DeGrom back last week, who's been solid since he came back. Then you got Scherzer at full health, at least right now he is. Then you got Chris Bassitt, who's having a great season. Then you also have Taijuan Walker, who's also had some type of resurgence out there with the Mets. And so, you know, the Mets, they've got a very solid starting pitching. They've got a great hitting batting lineup, and they've got great defense. And they've got a great manager as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see what goes on with the Mets. But Chris Bassitt, he just had an excellent outing on Monday night. And then in Baltimore, the Baltimore Orioles were playing the Toronto Blue Jays, and Ryan Mountcastle, he has sure owned the Toronto Blue Jays. As a matter of fact, he has the highest OPS versus any team in the history of the league versus the Toronto Blue Jays. He's got 13 home runs, 25 RBI. His OPS is 1.131 against the Blue Jays, and this is all in a total of 30 games. Now, that was on Monday night. I believe he added to the RBIs on Tuesday night for sure. but regardless, man, Ryan Mountcastle just absolutely obliterates and dominates and owns the Toronto Blue Jays. And then also just something of interest that was announced on Monday is the Kansas City Royals. They have added some new food selection to the stadium. Now, I personally, I know it's really difficult to tell that I'm a skinny bitch, so you would assume that I'm not really all about food, but that's completely the exact opposite. I fucking love food. And when I saw this, I was like, that sounds fucking good. And so the Kansas City Royals just announced for the rest of this season, they are going to be selling a barbecue Reese's sandwich. Now, basically, this is a pulled pork sandwich with Reese's peanut butter cups kind of sprinkled throughout it and with some barbecue sauce. Now, for some people, this might sound really disgusting, just the combination, because, I mean, you think of the combination of pulled pork and barbecue sauce and Reese's peanut butter cups. How is that going to taste good? That sounds fucking amazing to me. Now, I am a stoner, so those kind of combinations are very, very good if you're a stoner. but when I saw that shit, I was like, ooh, might have to take a trip to a Kansas City Royals game because that sounds damn good. All right, then on Tuesday night, Shohei Ohtani became the only player since Babe Ruth to have 10 home runs and 10 wins as a pitcher on the season. and man, what Shohei Ohtani is doing this season is just amazing. You know, he's hitting, his hitting has actually never been a problem since he hit the league. You know, he had suffered a few injuries the first couple of seasons in the league. I know he had Tommy John surgery, and then he had he just has had some issues with his pitching arm, and that's a big deal, obviously, when you're a pitcher. But he's been able to hit just because the injuries that he's had haven't really affected him as a batter. So his hitting skills are just off the charts. But as a pitcher, now he's really coming into his own. Now that he had a pretty solid year last year as a pitcher, but this year he's really just killing it. And like I've said before, it really sucks that Shohei Ohtani is playing for the Angels just because he's such a good player, he's not really getting the attention he deserves. Like, I feel like if he played for the Yankees, that's all we'd ever hear about is Shohei Ohtani. But since he plays for the Angels and they don't win and they're not successful, that you don't really hear about him. I think it's the same thing with Mike Trout. I mean, the average Joe walking around on the street probably couldn't even tell you who the fuck Mike Trout was, just because he's not a marketed player. Like if you were in a bigger market, like if you played for the Dodgers or the Yankees or hell now the Mets. So it sucks that Shohei Ohtani is with the Angels. Hopefully they can step it up at some point. I don't think it's going to be this season. It would be more like next season. But he is the first player since Babe Ruth to be a two-way player with his bat and pitching skills. And he's got over 10 home runs and 10 wins on the season. Then also something odd happened on Tuesday night. Now, especially since a couple years ago when the Houston Astros were caught cheating, electronics in baseball are a big no-no unless they're approved. Like, you'll see them in the dugouts right after if you strike out or whatever, you'll go back to the dugout and you can review film on maybe how, if you're a pitcher, on your pitching form or if you, or just whatever. And then same with hitters on if you think, oh shit, I should have gone for a fastball instead of a slider there, whatever. But they do rewatch film right there in real time in the dugout. And those are only on approved tablets by Major League Baseball. So you can't have any type of electronics with you in the dugout. Now, as far as cell phones go, that's kind of always been a rule where you don't have your cell phone on the sideline, you don't have your cell phone in the dugout, you don't have your cell phone at any point in the game. Now, of course, I'm sure they have the cell phones in the locker rooms, but when you're on the field or you're on the court or you're on just whatever the sport you're playing in, wherever you're at, there are no cell phones allowed. That's been a regular rule. Well, this week, Pittsburgh Pirates called up Rodolfo Castro from the minor leagues. And in his very first game that he played in this week on Tuesday, he was sliding into third base and his cell phone popped out of his pocket. Had to have been a very embarrassing moment for him. I don't know. I didn't really look into it if maybe he had happened to forget his cell phone was even in his pocket, or if he just had it out and forgot to put it away or whatever. But regardless, he slid into third base. His cell phone popped out. The third base coach picked it up and kind of had this shocked look on his face, like, what the hell just happened? And that's not a good look for your very first game. You might get sent back for something stupid like that. So that was very interesting. Then last night, the Field of Dreams game was played. Now, full disclosure, I personally think Field of Dreams is a boring-ass fucking movie. I have no emotional connection to it like most people do. Now, granted, I don't have a father. I never had a father growing up. He kicked my ass to the curb when I was two, so I don't have that, oh my god, want to play catch with your daddy moment. Like, that kind of shit to me is just fucking stupid. So the movie Field of Dreams, I've always thought was just an extremely boring and stupid movie. Most baseball fans love that stupid movie. But I will say, this Field of Dreams field that they play on is fucking spectacular. I would love to go watch a baseball game at the Field of Dreams. It is such a beautiful ambiance. I mean, when you get to see the sunset setting behind the cornfield, I mean, they did put like, because if you don't know, they just started playing the Field of Dreams game last year, and they do it in Iowa, not on the same field. They actually had to build a real field, and they put the cornfields behind this field this baseball field, just to give it the exact same feel as the movie Field of Dreams. Now, the actual movie baseball set where they filmed the movie is right to the side of it, like probably like a car's right away or some shit like that. I don't know. I've never been there, so I don't know how far away it is. But I do know the actual movie baseball field is there. But since the movie, what they used in the movie is it's way too small compared to an actual baseball field. So they had to build a real baseball field out there. And it sounds like it's going to be an annual thing. Now, next year, unfortunately, we won't get it because I guess some maintenance, they have to do some renovations to it. So we won't get it next year. But these past 2 years we had it. I think it was originally slated to happen in 2020. But of course, beautiful COVID happened and that fucked up the world. So we didn't get it in 2020. But we did get it last year, and it was what was it? The Yankees and the White Sox, which it was an epic game where the White Sox came, they tied up the game and won in walk off fashion. Now I didn't watch last night's game because it was between the Cubs and the Reds. Don't really care about either team. Neither one of them's competitive in the playoffs, so I didn't watch it. But the Cubs did end up winning 4-2, and so for me personally, I don't have any like, oh my God, this is part of the movie moment like most people do. But like I said, I think the ambiance is awesome and I would love to see a game there. I don't care who would be playing. I would just love to actually go to the field, see a game there just because you can really tell it's a very, I guess, intimate setting, you would say, because they don't have any outfield seats because the cornfields are back there. But they do have behind the plate and everything. So but it's very limited capacity in there. So it seems very intimate. Like I said, the setting is just awesome. And then I guess a highlight from last night is Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. actually went out onto the field playing catch so we could relive the moment in the movie. Hey, Dad, want to have a catch? Fucking stupid movie. But regardless, love Ken Griffey Jr., so it was cool to see him out there. And like I said, Field of Dreams game, we won't have it next year in 2023, but it looks like we're going to have it in 2024. Then just to catch up on what's gone on in this week of baseball, currently the Dodgers are on a 10-game winning streak. They have the most wins in the entire Major League Baseball with 77 wins, and they just are playing unstoppable baseball right now. Moving over to the AL, it's a little bit different because, you know, the Houston Astros and the New York Yankees have dominated the AL, but both of them have had a really down couple of weeks. Now, the Yankees more so than the Astros, but the Astros also haven't been playing that well either. Now, the Astros did finally overtake the Yankees for the best record in the AL with 72 wins, and the Yankees have 71, so it's not that big of a discrepancy, but hey, they took over that spot, which says a lot because the Yankees have been the most dominant team, especially in the AL all season long. So this slump that they're in, and they're 2-8 right now in their last 10 games, so they're not playing well. And they did get owned by Seattle earlier in the week, so the Yankees really got to step it up. But I think the Astros also have to step it up as well, just because they've had a down couple of weeks also. But even though the Yankees aren't playing well, Aaron Judge just continues to have a dominating season. He still leads the league in home runs with 45. He still leads the league in RBIs with 99. And he's raised his batting average to .304. So the guy is just having a phenomenal season. Hands down the AL MVP. But with those numbers, the Yankees are still slumping, so they gotta take it back to the old drawing board right now because they aren't playing that great of baseball. And then this next segment has got a couple of stories that I found very interesting. So we're gonna call this segment the Dirty Yankees. Now I'm not talking about any type of play on the baseball field. And with these couple of stories, we're going to be talking about off-the-field activities from these two dirty Yankees. So let's first start it off with Mickey Mantle. Now, I came across, pun intended right there, for this story for sure. But I came across this story, and I'd never seen it before. Apparently, it's been out there for a minute. But many years ago when the Yankees were, they built a new stadium. And I think this was even before the one they're playing in currently now. So whenever they had their last stadium when they first opened it, they contacted all of the old living legendary Yankees, and they wanted them to give them their most outstanding experience they've ever had at Yankee Stadium. And this was Mickey Mantle's response to that. This is so fucking funny. Okay. So this is direct. It's not a quote like where he spoke, but this is what he wrote down. I consider the following my outstanding experience at Yankee Stadium. I got a blowjob under the right field bleachers by the Yankee bullpen. This event occurred on or about, it was about the third or fourth inning. I had a pulled groin and couldn't fuck at the time. She was a very nice girl and asked me what to do with the cum after a cum in her mouth. I said, don't ask me. I'm no cocksucker. Signed, Mickey Mantle, the All-American boy. So apparently that is real. I didn't do extensive research on that, but I'm going to take it at face value, if you will. But I found that shit absolutely amusing. I can't say I don't not believe that. I actually do believe it, but that was a hilarious story. Hilarious quote, especially the end. I don't know. I'm no cocksucker. So that was the first dirty Yankee story. Then the second one is one that's been around for a while. It's a rumor. And, you know, I've mentioned before that I'm currently watching on ESPN Plus the documentary called The Captain. It's about Derek Jeter's amazing baseball career. Huge Derek Jeter fan. Love Derek Jeter. Also think he is fine as hell. So this story is, I can't believe they talked about this on the documentary. This was one of the last things I expected them to discuss, but they sure did, and I was really happy they brought it up so I could bring it up on my show. But if you don't know, many moons ago, well, actually, let's go back to Derek Jeter's career. For the most part, when Derek Jeter was a baseball player, he was a single bachelor. Yes, he dated women here and there, but for the most part, he was that dude. He didn't have a wife. He didn't have a kids. He really didn't. He didn't actually get married and have kids until I think either like the last year or two of his career or completely after he retired. So that was something. And part of the reason why is because he just wanted to focus on baseball. And hey, it worked out for him because he's a champion. He's one of the greatest legends of the game ever for the Yankees, especially. So you can't blame him. But there came to this point in his career, about midway in his point in his career, where all the media would focus on would be his dating life and who he was dating. And there was this rumor printed by Page Six. If you don't know who Page Six is, they are a New York tabloid. And they're known for just writing bullshit about celebrities. Now, when I say bullshit, I don't mean it's all lies. I'm just saying it's, you know, it's just celebrity gossip. Some of it may be true. Some of it may be a lie. But this was a story about Derek Jeter that they printed many years ago. When I say when it was like maybe the early 2000s, like 2000, 2001, in that time frame. They printed a story about how they supposedly spoke with a woman who had a one-night stand with Derek Jeter. And apparently when he was done with her and she left, in the limo that was waiting outside for her, there was apparently a gift basket that contained like Derek Jeter memorabilia, including like signed baseballs and shit like that. And then apparently maybe a couple months later, she slept with him again. And I guess he didn't realize he had slept with her before, so she got this gift basket again. Now, this has always been like a hilarious Derek Jeter rumor that's been around since then, and people still discuss it to this day. And like I said, I did not expect them to discuss it on his documentary, but they most certainly did. Now, I have two takes on this. First of all, I guess I'll give Derek Jeter's take on it. He said that this is a complete bullshit story. Who the hell would do that? Why would I do that? I would never sleep with women and then just like give them a gift basket after they leave. So he called the story complete bullshit. So as I expected. Now here are my two takes on it. My number one take on it is that I've never believed it. I've always kind of believed it to be a bullshit story. Because Derek Jeter's never really been that kind of a dude. And if he is that kind of a dude, it's kept under wraps. He's always been that single playboy guy when he was with the Yankees. But he never, like, was like, yeah, I'm dating Mariah Carey. Yeah, I'm dating Jessica Biel. Yeah, I'm dating, like, it was never, like, braggadocious. It was just, like, that's who he was dating. He never discussed that shit. It is what it is. So I never assumed that's what he would do, because that doesn't sound like something he would do. He's not really that kind of a dude. But my other take on this is, like I stated before I started this, I think Derek Jeter's hot, and I think he's a great baseball player. So all I have to say about this situation is, if I was one of these girls, I would have been fucking stoked to receive this gift basket. You mean to tell me I get to fuck Derek Jeter and then I get an autograph ball afterward? Fuck yeah, sign me up for that shit. So those are my two takes on that. Not, that's really just why I wanted to bring it up. Hey, I was completely shocked that Derek Jeter fucking even brought that up on his own documentary. Didn't expect to hear it, but I did. And I was like, hey, this is a great time to bring up this story on my podcast. And then the Mickey Mantle thing came out right after, I want to say like the day after I watched that episode of The Captain. I saw that Mickey Mantle quote, and I was like, well, shit, man. We got to call this episode Dirty Yankees, because we got a couple Dirty Yankee stories here for you. All right, now moving on to the NFL. The first story I really wasn't going to discuss, but there was a couple of things I noticed about it that made me want to discuss it. And that is the retired running back Marshawn Lynch. If you don't remember him, he had a stellar career. He was most known for Seattle Seahawks. He had some great plays with them, but he was originally drafted by the Buffalo Bills, then he was traded to the Seahawks, and then he ended up signing with the Oakland Raiders, and now he's retired. Well, earlier this week, he was arrested for a DUI. Now, I would only bring up something like this if you're an actual current player in the league, but the only reason why I bring this up is for two reasons. Number one, I don't know if you've seen Homeboy's mugshot, but dude was gone. Oh my God, he could barely keep his fucking eyes open for that mugshot. And so, A, I couldn't hold back my laughter when I saw that shit. But B, oh my God, my heart broke when I saw this. The car he was in a Shelby Mustang. Now, me, I'm a car girl. I love cars. I love muscle cars. And a Shelby Mustang is like one of my all-time favorite cars. That's number three on my list of cars. Number one, Bentley. Number two, Aston Martin. Number three, Shelby Mustang. Fucking love the Shelby Mustang. And then number four would probably be Corvette. And then number five, that's tough, but probably I'll go Ferrari there. So that's my top five favorite cars. So the Shelby Mustang, I fucking love. I actually drive a Mustang, Mustang GT. Love that motherfucking bitch. But when I saw what he did to this car, I wanted to fucking cry, because this car did not deserve this treatment from somebody driving it. A, when he was arrested, he apparently said he stole this car. So I guess that would explain why he was treating it so poorly. But on the driver's side, I think it was the back tire was missing and the front one was completely demolished. And I just gotta say, that is not how you treat a Shelby Mustang, okay? You treat those things beautifully, okay? Those are beautiful pieces of work. You do not fuck with a Shelby Mustang like that. I'll take that Shelby Mustang and I will treat that thing so nice. I would never do such a fucking thing to a Shelby Mustang, Mr. Lynch. Don't fucking do that shit. I'm gonna have to speak with you about that, Mr. Marshawn Lynch, man, because that's not how you treat a Shelby Mustang, okay? Jesus Christ. Anyways, onto actual football that's going on right now. Tom Brady has been excused from training camp, I believe, for the next week and a half, apparently to take care of some personal stuff. He didn't really say what it was. Apparently, we're hearing through the grapevine that his mother is not feeling well, which, I mean, that sucks. I mean, she did have to battle through cancer a few years ago. So, hopefully everything's all right there. But the fact that Tom Brady's going to be missing about a week and a half of training camp kind of says a lot. So we'll see what develops there. I don't think that's obviously going to affect anything with the team. He's Tom Brady, for Christ's sake. I'm sure dude's prepared. That's just something to look out for the next couple of weeks. Then last night, we had some preseason games, y'all. We had some preseason games. It is officially underway. We have football all motherfucking weekend. And yesterday, it started off with, we had the Giants versus the Patriots, and then we had the Titans versus the Ravens. Now, for the most part, especially these last couple of years, preseason football is a complete waste of time. I think the only purpose it serves now is just for you to kind of get your game planning going, to get players who maybe are coming off of a really bad injury, who just need to get some playing time in, or guys who you need to decide who needs to make roster cuts and who to cut and who's going to make the team. So that's really what the purpose of preseason is. But these days, preseason is boring as fuck. Even though I'm excited, we have football on. I'm probably going to watch the Cowboys game tomorrow, but I'm not going to be like heavy into it. I think it starts at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock my time. So that means I'm probably going to be conking out by halftime. Also, there's a good UFC fight on tomorrow, so I won't be shocked if I actually turn to that more than I do the Cowboys game. But regardless, I'm excited that preseason football's on, but it's just not as fun to watch anymore because for the most part, it's just the chump squad out there. Now, the only reason why I'm bringing up last night's matchup between the Baltimore Ravens and the Tennessee Titans is the Baltimore Ravens actually do kind of have an impressive winning streak going in the preseason. They won their 21st preseason game in a row yesterday. Now, they ain't winning any Super Bowls. This doesn't count for shit. But it is actually kind of impressive that you've won 21 preseason games in a row. I mean, that's like, they haven't lost a preseason game in like years. I don't know how many years that equates to because I'm bad at math. But that's years worth of preseason games they have not lost. That's like the majority of Harbaugh's coaching career there. So, hey, that just goes to show he's a good coach. And then also speaking of preseason, we do have some games this weekend. A few games I decided to highlight. Like I said, I don't think any of these games are going to be outstanding, but I felt like I should highlight them just for certain reasons. I mean, the first one being Cleveland Browns versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, obviously, usually you would not be highlighting such a horrible matchup because who gives a shit about the Browns and really who gives a shit about the Jaguars? But Cleveland's decided to play Deshaun Watson in tomorrow's game. So that's what you want to watch out for. The Dick Dangler gets to play tomorrow, even though the whole suspension thing's still up in the balance. Cleveland's going to go right out there, and they're going to start him at quarterback. So we'll see what goes on there. Then another interesting matchup, I think, is going to be the Green Bay Packers versus the San Francisco 49ers. Just two legendary franchises. I expect the Packers to be a good team, but I don't expect to see any starters, especially Aaron Rodgers, playing for the Packers. And then the Niners, it's just going to be interesting. I don't know if Trey Lance is going to play. If you are the Niners, I kind of feel like you would want to play Trey Lance at least for a little bit of preseason, but I don't know. If he does play, I think that's going to be very intriguing just to kind of gauge what we're going to see from Trey Lance this year. And then I also mentioned the Dallas Cowboys are playing tomorrow, actually playing versus the Denver Broncos. I really only highlighted this one, A, because I'm a Cowboys fan, but B, I'm kind of pissed off because I was just in Denver last month, and where I stayed, I stayed at this beautiful Airbnb condo, literally walking distance from the Denver Broncos stadium. My brother and I actually walked down there, walked around the parking lot, they have this cool little makeshift football field in there where you could take pictures, and it's a fun little area, but I'm pissed off, man, because shit, if I would have known that the Cowboys were going to be there, this would have been the perfect fucking opportunity to stay at that place, because I wouldn't have to worry about parking. Literally, just you make a left out of our front door of where we were staying, you walk a few blocks, and boom, there's the Broncos Stadium. So I would have fucking loved to have been at this game this weekend, but unfortunately, I'm not in Denver. And then just something I found very weird that I was just reading actually before I started the podcast was the Washington Commanders. You know, they've had a very tumultuous like 5 years now. But I think they've now are making it even more tumultuous with this stupid thing. But apparently their president came out today and said they may restrict this reporter from interviewing any more of their, just basically restricting the reporter from having any access to the Washington Commanders for the rest of this year for a interview he did with Carson Wentz the other day. I watched what the interview was, and I can't figure out what the issues are other than the Washington Commanders are butthurt little crybabies. Now, basically, the rumblings that we've been hearing about Washington so far since training camp began is they traded for Carson Wentz in the offseason. Now, Carson Wentz has had his ups and downs. He hit the league. The first couple of seasons, he was the dude. Everybody was thinking this guy is going to be the next coming of Jesus Christ in the football. He's going to be the next quarterback to watch. Turns out that's not how it's gone. He suffered through many injuries throughout his entire career, especially in Philly. Philly ended up trading him to Indianapolis last year. Indianapolis was not happy with how he played last year, and then they ended up trading him to Washington this year. And so throughout training camp, all we've been hearing about is Carson Wentz and his accuracy and just how horrible it's been, and he just hasn't looked very well during training camp. And so this reporter, while he was interviewing him, asked Carson Wentz how he felt about that. I feel like that's a basic, regular, general question. Most people probably aren't going to ask that question, but I don't see anything wrong with asking, how do you feel about hearing those issues about you and your accuracy? And Carson Wentz, he answered the question very professionally, and he didn't act like a crybaby about it. Now, maybe he did afterwards, but regardless, the question wasn't bad. And then after that, he asked how he felt basically about how people were giving up on him, and he kept getting traded from team to team to team. And then Carson Wentz answered the question, and they moved on. It was a very basic, general interview overall. Those were just the two, quote, controversial questions. But I found it amusing that now this guy may be restricted for the rest of the season from the Washington Commanders, which is just like, y'all have already had such a bad offseason full of PR follies. One would think you wouldn't want to piss off the only people in your area who may possibly write positive things about you. Now this reporter is, whether or not you restrict them or not, is probably going to have some type of vendetta, and maybe now they may dig into you a little bit more, or maybe write some more disparaging articles that you don't like. Regardless, that's not the way you want to go about shit. Hell, even if you weren't having the problems that that Washington's had this offseason, you still shouldn't be restricting reporters over those type of questions. If he would have asked some like super invasive question, I don't know, about like what's you and your wife's favorite sexual position, yeah, I'd have a fucking problem with that. But he asked an actual football question, stuff that's been being discussed currently and in the past for Carson Wentz. And I'm sorry, if you're an athlete and you're the face of a franchise, which a quarterback always is, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to answer questions that you don't like to answer. I mean, Tom Brady's been answering questions about his retirement and getting old since he turned like fucking 38, and he's 45 now. So I think the Commanders need to fucking grow up and get the fuck over that shit. All right, and then we had a little bit of NBA news this week. The NBA has decided that they are going to universally retire Bill Russell's number 6. So nobody will be able to wear the number 6 anymore in the NBA, unless if you already currently wear it, it will be grandfathered in. But anybody who hits the league now, so any of the rookies this year, they can't wear it, and nobody's going to be able to wear number 6 anymore. And I think that's great, because, you know, Bill Russell, he was, I would call him like the Babe Ruth of basketball, where he's like the first superstar, and he's a legend, and he carried a team, and he's got the championships and the MVPs and the defensive players of the year, and he was a complete ambassador of basketball. And I've mentioned many times before, he put up with a shit ton of racist bullshit, even from his own fans. So I think this is a great move by the NBA. You should retire Bill Russell's number six. The only player I could think of offhand who currently wears the number six is LeBron James. I think Caruso also wears number six. He plays for the Bulls now, but he used to play for the Lakers. So those are the only players offhand I could think of who wear number six. But I think there's a handful of guys who still wear the number six in the league right now. Now nobody will ever be able to wear that number six ever again. All right, and to end today's show, we're going into a top five list. And since we are in August and I've been discussing the second half of baseball, I thought a great list today would be the top five second half comebacks in baseball. Just teams who have been down and out and looking like they ain't making the playoffs or they have no shot at winning their division. And they would go on to make huge second half runs and either go on to win the World Series or lose the World Series. Yeah, I think every team. Yeah, every team made the World Series. A couple lost the World Series, but every one of these teams made crazy second half runs and made it to the World Series. I don't know if anybody's going to do that this year, but there's always a second half run by a team. Always. And so let's get into the top five second half comebacks in baseball, starting with number five, the 1935 Chicago Cubs. They were 10.5 games behind the New York Giants on July 5th. They would end up winning 62 out of their last 84 games, which would be they would at one point win 21 in a row. And they would go on that 21-game winning streak from September 4th to September 27th. They would end up winning the pennant by 4 over the St. Louis Cardinals, and they would go on to the World Series, but they would lose to the Detroit Tigers. Then the number 4 second-half comeback in MLB in baseball history was the 1969 New York Mets. They were 10 behind the Chicago Cubs on August 14th. They would go on a 38-11 run to end the season. They would win the NL East by 8 games, and they would go on to win the World Series against the Baltimore Orioles, which I thought was very odd because, I do love baseball. But, I mean, out of all the sports that I watch, NFL is my jam. I've been watching NFL football for as long as I can remember. And then I picked up all the other sports kind of along the way. And I became a baseball fan in elementary school, and it really started to stick out to me. Definitely in the Barry Bonds years and on. So I want to say, like, I really became, like, a huge baseball fan probably in, like, the late 90s, maybe, like, you know, 96, 97, around that time. So I was unaware that the Baltimore Orioles have even won a World Series, which I found that out after. I think they won the year after they lost this one, but I was shocked that they even lost one. I had no fucking idea that the Orioles have even been to a World Series, let alone win one, and they've done both. So that was something very interesting to learn, at least for me, because, you know, in 1969, I was not around then. I had many years until I was born. All right, then at number 3 on my top 5 second-half comebacks in baseball, the 1964 St. Louis Cardinals. They were 11 games behind on August 24th. They would end the season on a 28-11 with a 28-11 record, and they would go on to win the World Series against the New York Yankees. And apparently this was a very legendary legendary Cardinals team. This was with Stan Musial, and they just were a great baseball team. Then at number 2 on my top 5 second-half comebacks in baseball, the 1978 New York Yankees. They were 14 behind on July 20th. They would end up winning 52 of their last 73 games. They would have to go into the final game against the Boston Red Sox for the division, and they would end up winning that final game, and they would go on to win the World Series versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. Then at number 1 on my top 5 second-half comebacks in baseball, I had the 1951 New York Giants. They were 13 games behind the Dodgers on August 12th, and they would go on a 38-7 final season run. And the reason why this is number 1 is just because it really is legendary. If you are a baseball fan, you know you've heard, "The Giants won the pennant! The Giants won the pennant!" And you've seen it. And that's really why this is number 1. A, it was really a historic run. Just because of how far behind they were, and nobody really expected them to come back and win. But so they would go on this huge run, 38 wins and 7 losses on their final run, which would come down to a playoff game against the Dodgers for the division. And they would win that game, which is the game where the announcers, the Giants win the pennant, the Giants win the pennant. And this would be known as Bobby Thompson's shot heard around the world. It was one of the most widely discussed baseball topics, especially at the time. But unfortunately, the Giants would go on to lose the World Series to the New York Yankees. So that is my top 5 second half comebacks in baseball. Like I said, we've got more preseason football on hand this weekend. We got some UFC going on this weekend. We got some baseball, of course, going on this weekend. So enjoy the weekend of sports. And I will talk to you guys on Monday, where I will be starting to discuss my predictions on the NFL season. So look out for it, that we are head steam into the football season come Monday show. So look out for it. I will talk to you fools on Monday.